This is Philosophy Bites with me, David Edmonds.
And me, Nigel Warburton.
Philosophy Bites is available at www.philosophybites.com.
Philosophy Bites is made in association with the Institute of Philosophy.
Who was the greatest Cambridge philosopher of the 20th century? Wittgenstein, Bertrand Russell, G. E. Moore. Hugh Miller, emeritus professor at Cambridge, wants to nominate a figure virtually unknown outside academia, Frank Ramsey. Ramsey, the son of a mathematician, himself became a mathematician, though his awesome intellectual talents were applied to many areas. He learnt German in next to no time and translated Wittgenstein's famous book, The Tractatus Logico-Philosophicus, when he was just 19. He died 7 years later at the peak of his powers. His brother Michael, who became the 100th Archbishop of Canterbury, said Frank was interested in almost everything.
Hugh Miller, welcome to Philosophy Bites.
Thank you very much.
We're going to focus on Frank Ramsey on truth. Could you say a little bit about who Frank Ramsey was?
Well, Frank Ramsey was born in 1903. He was the son of a mathematics don at Cambridge. He got to know quite a lot of mathematicians, philosophers, economists in Cambridge, contemporaries of his. Then he did maths at Trinity College, Cambridge, graduated in 1923 with the top first in the subject. So he was a brilliant mathematician. Got a research fellowship at King's a year later, became a university lecturer in mathematics in 1926, and that was the post he held until he died just before his 27th birthday in 1930. Which makes it all the more remarkable how many other things he did in that very short life.
Well, what else did he do?
He founded a branch of mathematics, which is now called Ramsey theory. Don't ask me to explain it, I don't understand it. He founded two branches of economics. Keynes asked him to write articles for the Economics Journal. One's a theory of savings, study of how much of its income should a nation save, and a theory of taxation, the theory of optimal taxation, that is, to raise a given amount of revenue in tax. How should you do that while minimising the loss of utility to the people who are paying the taxes? And this has founded two branches of economics. Then he wrote an article which is the foundation of modern subjective decision theory. I mean, to do all this before he was 27 just shows what a waste it is he died then.
Why did he die so young?
He developed the symptoms of jaundice. He was misdiagnosed as gallstones. In fact, he had hepatitis. And a combination of the hepatitis and being operated on from gallstones killed him.
We're going to focus on his work on truth. Just in general terms, what did he say about truth?
Well, his work on truth is an important part of what he did most of, actually, even though he was a lecturer in mathematics, which is work on philosophy, all sorts of aspects of philosophy. But on truth, he developed a theory which has become famous or notorious, depending on whether you like it or not, which is often now called the redundancy theory, because most people who wrote about truth took the view that you needed a theory of what truth is, just as you might need a theory of what stars are, for example, so that you know what you're talking about and talk about truth. But his view was you don't need a theory of truth. The concept, he said, is really redundant. And he gave as an example, if you say that it's true that Caesar was murdered, that just means Caesar was murdered. The concept's redundant.
Does that mean that he didn't have any time for people who say, what is truth?
Well, it's true that he wouldn't have been very impressed by Pilate's question. He thought what was more important was to answer the question of what is it to believe one truth rather than another? What's the difference between different truths? What's the difference between different kinds of truths, like, for example, mathematical truths on the one hand and scientific ones on the other?
So he's a kind of zoologist of truth, in a sense, that he's looking to see all the different species of truth.
That's right. And he's also interested in why it matters. In other words, why, if you're going to have a belief, it's a good idea to have a true one.
OK, so one area in which people talk a lot about truth is the truths of mathematics. Now, those seem to be necessarily true. What did you say about that?
Well, he started being around Russell at the time, and Russell and Whitehead had written their famous work on the foundations of mathematics called Principia Mathematica in the 1910s, and their view of mathematics was that mathematics consisted of propositions which were completely general, not about any one thing or kind of thing in particular, but about all kinds of things. And Ramsey thought that wasn't enough. Take a proposition like any two things differ in at least 30 ways, which is completely general. And he said it might well be true, but even if it is true, it isn't mathematics, because it could be false. So he tried to plug this gap by taking over from Wittgenstein's work in the Tractatus Logico-Philosophicus, the idea that a necessary truth, a logical truth, is one which can't be false, a proposition like, for example, either it's raining or it's not, which is going to be true whatever the weather. Either it's raining or it's not isn't mathematical either, isn't a mathematical truth, because it's not general, it's too specific. So Ramsay's view was that you put the two together, that mathematical truths are truths which are on the one hand completely general and also logical, that is, they're tautological, they can't be false. And that was the way in which Ramsay fixed a defect in Principia Mathematica.
So what you're saying is that for Ramsay, 2 + 3 = 5 isn't about add 2 apples, add 3 apples and you get 5 apples. It operates at a very general level, but it's also tautological. So it's the equivalent of saying A equals A.
Yes, that's right. It can't possibly be false. And it's the combination of those two features, being completely general and being necessarily true, that make it mathematical.
Obviously not all truths are mathematical truths. What did Ramsay say about contingent truths, the truths that could have been otherwise?
Well, what he said about them was that given that you don't have to say, in his view, there's nothing to be said about what truth is, but what does matter is that if you believe something about some subject matter or other, that that should be true. And his question was, why? And answering that question, he said, will tell you what it is that distinguishes one truth from another.
Could you give an example of that?
Well, suppose, for example, I want to go and buy something, get some more milk from the local shop, supermarket. And, of course, I'm not going to go until and unless I believe the shop is open. That's the function of belief. The belief that the shop is open, combined with my desire to get some milk, and the belief that that shop sells milk, will get me to go to the shop. But unless those beliefs are true, that is, that it sells milk and that it's open, then I won't get what I went to get, namely milk. So the utility for Ramsay, utility being a technical term for what's good about it, of having true beliefs, is that if you act on beliefs when they're true, you'll get what you wanted to get. And if you act on them when they're false, you won't.
That's surely not true, though, is it? Because you can act on false beliefs and, by a bit of luck, get what you want.
You never act on just one belief. You act on a combination of beliefs. And if they're all true, you'll get what you want. If two of them are false, then they may, as it were, cancel out. But truth is that property of beliefs, says Ramsay, which ensures that if you act on them, you will get what you want.
So you can only be sure of getting what you want if you believe true things.
That's right.
Now, how does that amount to an improvement on what went before?
Well, because Ramsay builds that up into a theory which has since been called success semantics, which says that if you take the conditions under which the actions succeed, like the conditions under which you'll get the milk you go out for, the shop is open, it has milk in it, those conditions taken together are the conditions in which the belief is true. And if you ask what a belief is about, a contingent belief, the sort we're talking about now, if you ask what a belief is about, what its content of that belief is, then a standard way of looking at it in philosophy is to say it's its truth conditions, that is, the conditions under which it will be true. And Ramsay's theory is the basis for a particular semantics which says that the truth conditions of a belief, what it's about, what has to be the case for it to be true, are given by the conditions under which the actions it would make you perform succeed. The success conditions of the actions that beliefs cause are the conditions under which the belief is true. So it basically grounds what beliefs are about in terms of how they make you behave and when that behaviour will succeed in getting you what you want.
In the example you gave, if somebody has a true belief that they'll get milk from the shop, that the shop's open, that the milk isn't poisoned, there are all kinds of beliefs there, and a desire to get the milk, that's a very straightforward case. But many of our actions, it's not absolutely clear to us what our beliefs are. Does it follow from what Ramsay's saying that somebody else might know better than we do what our beliefs are?
Oh, they might well. There's nothing in this theory that says that you have to be conscious of the beliefs you act on. In fact, very often you're not. I mean, I go round the street when I'm about to cross the road. I habitually look to the right because traffic here keeps on the left. And I do that without thinking about it. But what makes me do that is my belief that the traffic does keep to the left. And so you need to look to the right if you want to avoid being run over. And put it this way, if that belief were false and I hadn't realised I was in France, for example, that might well be fatal.
But usually when we use the word content, we're thinking of something linguistic. We've obviously used sentences to communicate. From what you were just saying, it sounds as if the belief, it doesn't have to be conscious, and perhaps it doesn't even have to be the kind of thing you could put into a sentence yourself.
No, it certainly doesn't. I mean, one of the virtues of this view, as far as I'm concerned, is that it explains how animals have beliefs. Cats learn to recognise the approach of a dog, and they believe it's a dog, and they take appropriate action. Or if they believe it isn't a dog and they're wrong about that, they could be in bad trouble. So there's no presumption that in order to believe something, you have to be able to put it into language. I should say that this theory of Ramsey's, which says that content, as I'm calling it, it's a technical term, it just means what the belief is about, the conditions under which it would be true, that is not derived from the meanings of sentences. So the whole theory about how sentences get their meanings that goes with this view is that we learn to use sentences to communicate the beliefs that we've got, a sort of belief-first theory of the meanings of language. The rival theory, which oddly enough, in my view, is more popular, is the language-first theory, which says that unless you've got a language, you can't have beliefs, which seems to me absurd, and that if you want to know what the content of a belief is, what it's about, you have to get it from the independently established meaning of the sentences that would express that belief. And that view goes back to Frege. It's carried on by other philosophers since, like Dummett. And for some reason, which is not clear to me, this is the dominant view in the philosophy of language and the philosophy of mind.
Ramsey was an atheist. His brother ended up Archbishop of Canterbury. Now, they both have beliefs about God, different beliefs. How would that cash out in terms of what we've just been talking about?
Well, one of the things that, as a fellow atheist, I rather regret is that if the people who believe in an afterlife, for example, are wrong, they will never know. If I'm wrong, I probably will know. This is mildly irritating. But there's nothing in the theory of success semantics, as I'm calling it, which says that you have to know whether your actions are successful. When you say you fulfill a desire, normally, of course, when you do that, you know you've done it. But you can think of cases where you make a will, for example, because you desire that your money or the rest of your money or some of your money should be left to particular people. And you believe that by making a will in this form, that will happen. If your beliefs are true, it will happen. If your beliefs about it are false, it may not happen. But either way, you won't know. But the point is your action will succeed even if you're not there to see the success. And the same goes, in my view, for beliefs about the afterlife.
From the enthusiasm of your exposition of Ramsey's ideas, it's obvious that you think he was right on many topics. How would you rank him as a philosopher?
Well, I think he is one of the philosophical geniuses. If you want a musical analogue, I think it's Mozart, except that Mozart lived on to the ripe old age of 36 before he died, and Ramsey died at the age of 26, having founded a branch of mathematics, two branches of economics, subjective decision theory, widely used by economists, a new theory of truth, a theory of semantics, and several other things that I haven't even mentioned. Most philosophers, at their best, do less than half of that in three times as long a life.
In which case, why isn't he better known?
I don't really know, probably because not enough of us plug him.
Hugh Mellor, thank you very much.
Thank you.
There's now a Philosophy Bites book published by Oxford University Press. For more information, go to www.philosophybites.com.
For more information about the Institute, go to www.philosophy.sas.ac.uk.